Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Mike Lupica, MLB.com, MSNBC, and my new book, Batting Order, for middle grade readers.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and you are listening to the Sports Reporters Podcast, the podcast incarnation of long-running ESPN Sunday morning TV show. Same cast, different medium, same subject matter. And we find ourselves, as we are broadcasting this, looking at what might be the end of an NBA season, what might be the crowning glory for Canada to finally steal a game from us and claim a championship the way we've been doing with their hockey for decades. and so much riding on the line, including the calf of one Kevin Durant. Will he or won't he? A lot of drama. Might be the end of the NBA. Might be just the beginning of a great run by the Golden State Warriors. So I put to you, my fellow colleagues, right off the bat, are we watching the last basketball game of the year tonight?
Mitch, by the way, just before we get to basketball, please remember that one of the most complete and wonderful baseball teams of the last 30 years were the Blue Jays of the early 90s, who won two World Series in a row. So they grabbed the national pastime a couple of times.
This century.
The beauty and the curse of the podcast world is by tomorrow, the season may be over. Okay. What I'll say is this. I hope the Warriors go down swinging. I hope it doesn't end. Nothing against the Raptors. I hope it doesn't end in game five, because I'd like to see this thing play out.
It's interesting that how the narrative has changed, so many people are commenting how they look tired and worn and emotionally drained and all this and their defeat in game four. I'm not going there necessarily. No, I'm not. And I don't think that whatever ailed them in game four, they have a possibility of straightening themselves out for five. But the contingency of the Durant thing obviously is self-evident, that no one knows what he was going to be able to can produce after being out since May 8th. That's a big, long chunk of time.
And Bob, don't you think it's just generally the drama about Durant, all the it doesn't just wear on us. It wears on them. You could see it wearing on Steve Kerr the other night. Don't you think that it saps energy from a team?
Well, it's conceivable, I guess. I'm hesitant to get too melodramatic in that vein about that, but I think in this case it may have been the case. You're right. We're all Duranted out. I mean, we're Duranted out. This soap opera,
ever been used as a verb before.
Well, that's why we occupy a singular niche in the podcast.
I think it is different. I think it is different, Mike, for the team versus the media and the fans and everybody else. I think the team, from which there are no secrets kept, has been well aware that Kevin Durant isn't playing. And
do you think he's going to play tonight?
No, I don't. I don't. Wow. I don't think. I think they'll suit him up.
He's going to play.
But I think he's going to be, if he plays, it's going to be very limited and ineffective based on the little, and I have no inside knowledge other than what I've read, but he lasted in practice all of a couple of minutes, apparently, yesterday, which was supposed to be his big practice back. That was his first practice back. And then was seen going into the locker room with ice packs on his calves. We've all watched this with injuries. Talk. Rumor. Not so bad. But in the end, an injury still rules. The rumors don't rule. Desire doesn't rule. The body rules. And if you can't play with it, you can't play with it. And I think only recently has it started to haunt the Warriors about, well, are we going out with the game plan with Durant tonight, or are we going out with the game plan without it? Up till now, I don't think they ever thought he was playing. We might have. They didn't. But what I do think can change tonight, guys, and I think has been a problem for the Warriors, I still think if, let's say, Klay Thompson is good, they match Toronto in talent even without Kevin Durant. They've got the talent. They have not had the intensity. They have not had the defensive intensity that they normally have. Remember, they've been winning games without Kevin Durant against good teams. You know, that this challenge didn't just start. They
Mitch,
have not
Mitch,
been intense.
Think about where we are with this series and what we thought after the first couple of games, okay? Think about, you just said, the defending champs, that super team of this era, they have the talent to match up with the Raptors. Look how the narrative has changed in this series.
Well, just in case you're assuming the opposite, like, well, the Toronto has too much. I don't think they have too much. Do you?
No, I don't. I just think it's so interesting that how quickly this thing has changed, because it really changed not with Durant's injury, Mitch. It changed when Clay got hurt, because if Clay's right, healthy for that game, we're having a whole different conversation
well,
today.
It reminds me a lot of when Draymond Green, you know, knuckleheaded himself out of was it game 5 or game 6 against Cleveland. Yeah, and
game
changed
five
that
at
whole
home.
Series. Right,
at
and
home.
Changed that whole series. And at home, Klay Thompson, now not because of being knuckleheaded, but he just didn't play, and they weren't ready for a game without Klay Thompson and without Kevin Durant, and they suffered in it. And then he came back, but you know, by that point already, there was some karma working the other way. Here's two things about tonight. One I already stated. The Warriors are going to play literally as if there's no tomorrow. We haven't seen that kind of attitude from them. And they are the defending champs. And Mike and Bob, you and I have talked about this many times on the show. You still have to kill a defending champ. Inside the mind of all defending champs is that one more championship performance. And they don't want to go out a certain way. If they turn up the intensity and Thompson and Steph are who they are, and Draymond Green plays intelligently. And I'll add one more thing. They keep the ball out of Boogie Cousins' hands at the start of the game, because he clearly
well,
is
you don't
not
want him
to
be a playmaker?
No, I don't. I don't want him touching the freaking ball. But here's the second part. Here's the second part, guys, and then I'll shut up and throw it out to you. We all know that when you haven't done it before, closing out a series is a big challenge. Winning game the fourth game of this thing will be a much bigger challenge to Toronto than winning games 1, 2, or 3. And we have to see if they have a taste for that jugular yet. We don't know.
All right, I'll buy that. And I'm going to throw this one out there. Have we reached a point where we are willing to, or we want to say that that Siakam is now a known quantity? Do you expect a big, you know, game out of Siakam?
He came back, Bob, after his one sketchy game. He's come back strong.
Not enough for us to put him in.
I'll be surprised if he doesn't show up tonight. We know Kawhi is going to show up, but Bob, it's very interesting how Mitch set this up. Okay, I saw yesterday in the French Open final, team and Nadal are set all. Okay, they're a set-all. Now, the Warriors are not a set-all, okay? They're down in this thing. But once they were a set-all, Nadal goes 6-1, 6-1 after that. It's like, okay, I'm in the team's thinking, okay, I'm in this now. Well, he wasn't in it, okay? And you're right. To finish the champ tonight is an entirely different set of circumstances, even if you've got the game at home. The one thing that I will say is they do have a guy in the gym who knows how to close out this kind of game. And that's the guy who's become the best player, and that is Kawhi Leonard.
They haven't always been great, Mike, at relying on him and using him to his experiences level. I agree with you that he's the best player in the gym, and I agree with you that he's the only guy in the Raptors with this kind of pedigree. But
they all say that they take their lead from him, Mitch. I've listened,
yeah.
I've read and listened to the quotes, and
well,
they
can say whatever they want. I've watched every minute of this series.
But they've indicated that by the way they've played. They have taken the lead from him. They have relied on him in the biggest moments. They have seen the fact that he plays two-way basketball at a time when very few big stars do in the sport. All I'm saying is they have drawn on his strength so far.
They have drawn on his strength. They don't always use him for the baskets that they need when you would think, okay, now's the time for their star to take over. I've seen the ball in Lowry's hands way more than it ought to be, considering how much better Kawhi Leonard is than Kyle Lowry or Green or any of these other guys in there. Now, we'll see if they do it tonight, if they just basically say, you win it for us, you win it for us. I'm sure Golden State is basically contemplating, are we gonna just play a game where we let Kawhi Leonard get his, and see if the rest of the guys can beat us. I'm sure that they're contemplating that. Steve Kerr has to, I mean, he's a smart coach, and he sees that, you know, he's the only guy, and especially in a closeout game, he's the only guy with that kind of experience. So, you know, what Kawhi Leonard does that's so great beyond his scoring is you'll watch him go 5 minutes without hitting a basket or without them giving him the ball on a play. I mean, I can't understand why Kawhi Leonard, there are plays where he doesn't touch the ball when they come down on the court. I don't understand that. He has to touch the ball, you know, and that's what I mean by, you know, are you kidding me? Kawhi Leonard's over in there in the corner and Lowry and Gasol are going back and forth with it. But what Kawhi Leonard will do with you for you on the other end of the court is charge in on a rebound that he has no business getting and get it. And you won't even notice that. You know, the guy, the announcer, go, Kawhi Leonard with the rebound. And you go, wait a minute. He was out at like the top of the key and he comes down there and gets the rebound, or he'll make a steal, or he'll put some defensive pressure on. And you're right, Mike. Nobody else on either team is playing a two-way game like Kawhi Leonard
is. But here's the one thing I'll say, Mitch, before Bob picks up on this. Okay. He's not James Harden, this guy. We can, on one hand, celebrate what a consummate team guy he is and ask him to demand the ball every single time down, even in the big. That's not who he is, okay? He to me, he is the consummate team player. Steph has the ball in his hands a lot. Kawhi's not that guy. He's just not that guy. And to me, it's counterintuitive to expect him to suddenly turn into James Harden right now.
I'm going to throw one at you out of nowhere here. Would it stun you if Kyle Lowry had a 25-point or even a 30-point game tonight?
Yes.
Well, it would, yeah, it would kind
of. A 30-point game?
A four-time All-Star?
Yeah, I don't care about all-star teams.
Bob, has he had 30 points in the playoffs?
He hasn't been playing like
substance,
that.
A player of known substance is I'm just throwing out.
No.
I'm just throwing
but in. Bobby, has he even had 30 in the playoffs?
No, but I'm. Tonight could be the night.
The only way that happens, Bob, is if Golden State decides we're going to double up on Leonard every chance we get, and anybody else can. Because Lowry will have the ball all the time if Leonard doesn't. And if he keeps throwing him. He had that one game where he was throwing in everything from the ocean. But he had 10 points in their big win, you know, the other night. Three for 12. And, you know, he's very good at fouling. And he's very good. He's a good distributor. You know, he had 7 assists. He moves the ball around. I don't particularly like his style of cutting across the lane and moving, you know, not shooting and moving it around. That's not my particular favorite thing. But okay, it works for them. He's their quarterback. He moves the ball around on him. But if he's getting 30, it's because they're having two guys on Kawhi Leonard.
Look, 30 was but all I am doing is raising the possibility that a known quantity person who is a four-time All-Star, who is a veteran. I agree. I've been screaming about his dumb fouls, Mitch. Trust me. I'm not happy with the way he's been playing, or I wouldn't be happy if I were his coach. I am just not. I'm not willing to dismiss. I'm throwing it. I would not be stunned if he had 25 points, because I think he's very totally capable of doing it, right, particularly if they want to shift their
and don't you think Steph was tired? I know everybody's tired at this time of year. I used to laugh sometimes back in the day when I'd hear players saying, I've got mild tendonitis behind both knees in the playoffs. I'm thinking everybody's got mild tendonitis behind both knees at this. But don't you expect a big bounce back game from Steph?
Especially because they had that extra day.
Well, never surprised. Of course not.
Let me ask a larger question about this series, okay? And again, we knew the television ratings were going to be down. As good a story as we think the Raptors are, we knew that they weren't going to be a big television draw, even with Kawhi. Do you think it's a general, not lack of interest, but non-fascination with the Raptors? Or do you think people are sick of the Warriors and sick of the drama about Durant and sick of talking about where he's going to be playing next year?
I think there could be some Durant fatigue and on the part of the population.
I'm saying is you said Durant it out, okay? But yes. Is the whole world Durant it out?
No, I mean, it's very possible something's going on out there. That's as good an explanation as any, because we thought that people, and this just, this also, how this fits into the idea that we talk about in times in sports about the value of the target team, you know, having the super team.
Right.
And
we thought we had one here.
It brings people into the tent, pro or con, and yet this team didn't have much con going for it, as far as we know. You know, this was not a Patriots thing where there was reasons to dislike them. It was not the Yankees. It's not the Cowboys. This is a whole, there was nothing but lovability about them until Durant got involved. Maybe that's enough.
Well, see, I see it kind of the other way. I see one of the reasons if ratings are down, and I'm not spending a whole lot of time worrying about how many people are watching, is because Durant isn't playing. I think people like to watch Kevin Durant play, and he's not playing. So you just took one of the big superstars in the NBA out of the performance. On top of that, the other team, you know, 50% of the finals is from another country. So you're not going to find a whole lot of fans in America who say, well, you know, I used to live in Toronto, so I'm still rooting for him. I'm watching him, you know. Kawhi Leonard is a superstar, but he's not a very tangible superstar for the average fan. They can't embrace him. They don't know who he is. When he played with San Antonio, he was still amongst the cast in San Antonio. You know, he didn't dominate there the way that LeBron James did. You have the LeBron James factor missing. You know, he's a staple, whether you want to say it or not. He's a staple of June in the NBA. And he's gone. So you have LeBron James gone. You have Kevin Durant gone. You have a team that nobody knows about, a superstar on that team that nobody really cares about. And then, you know, on the plus side, you've got Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Well, you know, that accounts for the people who are watching. And if it goes to game 6 and 7, I think your numbers will pick up. You know, I'm sure that ratings in games 2 and 3 aren't such a big deal. But that explains your rating situation. I still think it's good for the game of basketball on every level that we're seeing this. And I still think, Mike, I am staring at the lineups here, and I see the Golden State Warriors with Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, Boogie Cousins, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson as their starting five. And I say that's good enough to win. I don't care if Kevin Durant doesn't even come to the game. That is good enough to win tonight or any night against Siakam, Marcus Gasol, Kyle Lowry, Green, and Kawhi Leonard. It is. They have not played well enough. They have not played intensely enough. They have not defended. They miss. They leave guys wide open to get their threes. They don't cover them in the corner. A lot of that is just effort. And as much as we've saluted Draymond Green when he's done well, he has not been consistent. The worst thing you want to hear out of Draymond Green's mouth, if you're a Golden State Warriors fan, is I got to play better, because that means he just had another game where he didn't do what he was supposed to do, and he better not be saying it tonight. But if he brings it tonight, and Steph Curry brings it tonight, and Klay Thompson brings it tonight, and they have their experience and they get anything from their bench at all, I don't see it so impossible that they win this game.
No, I don't think it's impossible either. And what's interesting about this, and again, the season may be over by the time people listen to this podcast tomorrow, even if the Warriors win tonight, after what we've seen in Oakland, their home court, they're no sure thing to win game 6, even if they get it back there.
No, not the way they played this year.
They could lose in 6 and in 7. You know, same thing. They have come back once from a 3-1. You know, they do have that in their muscle memory. It wasn't a final.
Yes, but they do. Yes, they do. And again, this is a night when they will not just be asked to call on the talent in the room, but the athletic character in the room. And it will be interesting to see if Durant even plays a little bit, because you can never discount. I mean, you know, what if he does come out and make two bombs? Yeah. like Willis Reed limped out against the Lakers and made two shots and sat down, and then Clyde Frazier had one of the greatest game sevens in the history of the, what was it, 36-19 and 7, Bob, that night?
36-19, that I do know.
Yeah, and Clyde always laughed at the notion. People called it the Willis game, and he'd say, what about me?
What about my 36-19?
Meanwhile, well, what about just?
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Oh no, I can't get. I can't get enough shots of that wonderful crowd up there in Toronto out of my head. I love it. I love every time the camera cuts to those people, and I love what it's been, how they embraced the team and the sport.
Well, I'll give you the ultimate of that, Bob, because as you know, I live here in Detroit, and we are so close to Canada. We get Canadian radio stations and all that. It's part of our regular routine. So this morning I'm driving around and I'm listening to the FM alternative rock. Canadian station out of Windsor. Okay, the kind of stuff that plays the Indigo Girls, you know, and plays like six songs in a row, and then the seventh song, the female disc jockey or whatever they call them, presenter says, "That's a Monday morning and only 12 hours from the big game tonight, the Raptors." And I'm thinking, this is the first time I have ever heard any mention of sports on this channel, period, let alone from the morning show presenter during an alt-rock music thing. That's how big this thing has become for the country of Canada.
It's nice. It's a good, it's a cool phenomenon.
By the way, did you see some of the scenes and hear what was going on at the Canadian Open golf tournament yesterday? They fell in love, of course, with Rory McIlroy, who was trying to shoot 59 in the last round, but it was interspersed with "Go Raptors" chants, and then somebody handed him a Raptors jersey after he finished his round. It was very cool.
I did hear that.
Well,
that
leads to a larger question about sort of how we got here and this whole, because it's so remarkable. We're talking about Canada and that being a part of the NBA Finals and the chance that a championship would be going to Canada in the summer of 2019. When we began in the fall of 2018, that was not the narrative that we thought was going to play out. It was going to be interesting to see how Kawhi Leonard did in Toronto, now that he's left
and questioning why Masai Ujiri had mortgaged everything on a guy who might be a 1-year rental. Well, this is why.
And might be a head case. I mean, look at what we talked about at the beginning of the season. Is LeBron James going to be able to stir those young guys up well enough to take them to the finals? Okay, there wasn't any talk of them making the playoffs. Take them to the finals. You know, wait till you see, the ball kid playing with him. Suddenly he'll become a real player. And you know what? Those other guys that they got on there are pretty good. They'll be a nice compliment for LeBron. And can they get past the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals to represent the West? And here, by the time the season's over, they're miles away from making the playoffs at all. Houston was supposed to be, you know, such a big story, and look what ended up happening to them in the playoffs. No one saw Portland having this kind of a season. Everyone thought that they were, you know, in a rebuilding mode. There's a lot of very strange things that have gone on from the East to the West here.
And Bob, let me ask you something, Bobby. Mm-hmm. Do you look at what the Raptors have done, okay? And yes, we've been LeBroned out by now. Okay, also a verb. We've seen the lasting and enduring greatness of the Warriors, but off of Portland, off of what the Raptors do, the Bucks aren't going anywhere. On and on. Is this sport about to be like a 19th century land grab in Oklahoma that it has just opened up for a whole lot of teams?
Well, the thing is that we've got this potentially tumultuous offseason with the 4K guys available, you know, theoretically, you know, Kyrie and Kemba in addition to Clay and who I don't think is going anywhere, but and Durant. Starts with that. You know, now it's not a glamour draft after 1, 2, 3. That would be cool if it were, but it's not. And so that's not going to be very riveting, I don't think. But that's the thing. This offseason, this free agency, and there's some others out there too. But those are the.
Is it good for business, Mitch and Bob, to have this free agent drama every year, or do people get tired of that eventually too?
Well, no. I wish I could be definitive. I'm just asking.
I'm just throwing it out there.
I don't think it's good for business because it happens too frequently for the fan to be able to know who he or she is rooting for.
Right, the volume of it. The volume of it feels suffocating sometimes.
Like I was going to answer with a knee jerk, and then I you know happened to be reading a story about the free agency in football and realized, well, wait a minute, before you make that, you know, and then there's baseball. Every one of the major sports has a certain amount of turnover. I mean, look at the Bryce Harper and Mike Trout and Machado and all that stuff talk that dominated the offseason in baseball before they finally settled. Look at, you know, a handful of the big free agent names that switched around, quarterbacks that switched teams in the NFL. But it doesn't seem to be, relative to the sport and relative to the teams, as voluminous as what happens in the NBA now, seemingly summer after summer, where guys are deliberately taking shorter contracts so that they can control their fate and you know, come out in the max year and all the rest. You know, I think when LeBron James changes teams as often as he does, that would be like Tom Brady playing for four different teams. You know, there's a difference. If Tom Brady kept switching teams, I would say it's really bad for football what's going on here. But you can count on Tom Brady being where he is. You can count on Ben Roethlisberger being where he is. You know, you could count on Russell Wilson being where he is and certain star players, you know, not leaving there. That doesn't happen in the NBA. I mean, look at who we're talking about. Kevin Durant. Arguably, if Kevin Durant is not the best player in the league, it might be Kawhi Leonard. If Kawhi Leonard's not the best player in the league, it might be LeBron James. All three of them are moving around the board, and the two of them could be on different teams next year. That doesn't happen in the other sports very often.
Yeah. Hey, can I ask?
And a player of that stature has a disproportionate effect on a team than it would in one player would in football.
And on unless fans. It's,
yeah, and right. So, it's a very, very good point that it's the nature of the beast. And, you know, the only thing I can say is this. Modern younger fans, it's all they know. You know, so this is the this is the way of the world, you know, and we do know the NBA has a very good young demographic. I think it may be older fans that are right. Get a little exasperated by this, although where that dividing line is, I don't know.
All right, let me ask this to my friends Mitch Albom and Bob Ryan on the Sports Reporters Monday podcast before Game 5. All right, let me pose it this. The Warriors do not defend their NBA championship. Mitch and Bob, if you're Kevin Durant, what would you do?
I think you go. Now, that's not me in Kevin Durant's body. That's Kevin Durant and me analyzing.
Yeah,
I think Kevin Durant wants to go. I don't think he wants to go through this again about, you know, how much of a warrior is he really. There's some irony to the fact that when they need him the most, he's not on the team. And there's a little bit of that narrative out there of like, well, you were never one of us anyhow. You know, that you get that from Draymond Green vibe a little bit. You know, we were here from the start. You jumped from a team that we used to perennially thump. And you decided, let's go play. I'll go play with the big guys and grab some championships. And even though you led us to several championships here, you're not purely a Golden State Warrior. I think that's how he perceives it a little bit. I think he's watched some of the criticism that's come around them and him. There are some people saying, what's it taking him so long and all the rest. I think he just wants a new start where he's the guy. He's got rings. No one's going to question that he can win an NBA championship. And I think if a New York or LA or one of those major markets somehow opens up for him where he can team up with somebody else, I think he goes.
I think it's logical too, because I think that what is most motivating him is how do I this legacy word? How do I re-ingratiate myself with the public that think that I'm not a bad guy? It didn't occur to him or never just dawned on him that by doing what he did, it was going to alienate so many people. He just didn't get it. Maybe he should have, but he didn't. He didn't get that he was piling on in the eyes of vast amount of people. So, okay, I'll show you. He knows now wherever he goes. If and when he goes, now wherever he goes, unless it's Toronto and replacing Kawhi, that'd be hilarious. No, but it would be. And he's not going to Toronto. And wherever he goes, he will be perceived as a missing piece of a puzzle, not an extra, you know, piling on person at this time. No matter where he goes, he will be the missing piece of a puzzle.
We've talked about this before. Good luck with doing that, okay? Good luck with planting your flag on the hill and saying, I'm the man now. I think he's going to go for a non-basketball reason. I think he has got a grand vision of Kevin Durant, Inc., the way LeBron has a vision of LeBron, Inc. All right, second question. Let's say the Raptors win the NBA championship. Kawhi, Mitch, then Bob, do you go or do you stay?
Of all people asking, there are two people for sure that it's fruitless to try to get inside their heads.
I know, but that's the fun of doing this.
I know. The other, of course, being Kyrie. I think he might stay.
See, I think he might stay. It's not bad being beloved by an entire country.
No.
Well,
I know,
here's why I think he might stay. He just spent an entire year last year And none of us know how he took it because he wasn't public. But I cannot imagine, since blood courses through his veins, and I believe he is a human being like the rest of us, there's some doubt, given his basketball talent, he may come from another planet. But let's say he's human. That could not have been fun for him to have been questioned, to have been vilified, to have been taken apart by the people in San Antonio where he thought he was once so beloved. Now he goes to Toronto. He becomes beloved not just by a city, but by a country. And he's going to pick up and walk away from that and put himself right back into being questioned and hated and vilified and what kind of team guy are you and all the rest. For what? He's with a pretty good cast. Siakam is a kid. You know, Lowry's older. You know, Gasol is older. They may have to, you know, rebuild that way. But, you know, where's he going to go that he's going to have as good a chance, especially if he stays, you know, if he stays in the East, if he goes to the West, I don't care who he joins, it's going to be a battle. The West is Game of Thrones. You know, it's just always somebody who can kill you out there. He's in the East. He's on a perennial team. The only guy he has to worry about really is Giannis, you know, in terms of matching him on the East right now and see what happens with Philadelphia. So I don't think it's so far-fetched that he stays, because who would want to put themselves through that 2 years in a row?
Yeah, but he's on record as saying he does not care about fame. He does not care about...
Yeah.
This is not fame. I understand. It's a whole... That's not fame.
Right.
That
it's
that we're
infamy.
Talking about. But boy, I don't... He's just totally different. He's just
where do you
not
think
wired.
He would go? I mean, where do you... What
Clip, Jersey's got room for two...
Jersey, are you still calling them Jersey?
Oh, Jersey. Brooklyn. I'm sorry. Brooklyn. The Nets. Brooklyn Nets are a possibility.
They got
regard.
Room for two guys, but I just got a feeling that if he wants to go somewhere, he's going to go to Los Angeles, because doesn't everybody want to end up in Los Angeles?
Although not a Los Angeles guy, but he's a Californian.
But it's fun. It's such a fun conversation, because Kawhi was not this guy at the start of the playoffs. Kawhi became Kawhi across the last couple of months. We were not talking about him. Bob, I know you thought Toronto was always going to make the NBA Finals, and you were consistent about that. All I'm saying is, he at the start of the playoffs, nobody was calling him what Masai Ujiri, his boss, called him after they won the Eastern Conference, which is the best player in the league.
Yeah, well, just strong argument for it. There's no question about it. No, it's a fascinating thing. And the thing about it, he's the most uncharismatic great best player in the league in my memory.
That's why it works well in Toronto. You know, yeah,
he might be where he's supposed to be. All right, let me ask you, before we turn the page.
Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. You got extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to-do that you do today.
Can we just spend 1 minute about what Rafael Nadal did in Paris yesterday? Oh. Okay? Because he won his 12th French Open. Okay. And I think I saw this stat that of all the Americans in the history of the event, all Americans have won 11 French Opens. Okay.
I'm sure it's some fascinating numbers.
Wow. And now, but now it's 20 to 18 with him and Fed. And Nadal gave a great answer yesterday. He said, I've never been the guy who wants a house as big as my neighbor's, or if my neighbor's got a big television set, I don't have to have as big a television set. You know, it's in his mind now. Okay, and there's nothing that he is doing right now to indicate that he's going to stop winning French Opens anytime in the foreseeable future. If he stays healthy across the rest of this year and he can pick off a Wimbledon or a U.S. Open, now it's game on. And Mitch and Bob, you know what I keep thinking? Maybe the tennis gods will have them both end up with 20, the way Chris and Martina each ended up with 18.
Mike, let me ask you something as our resident tennis guy here. Is there a yeah, but that people will attach because he won so many?
That's why I was just going to ask the same question.
On the freak surface that so many people don't.
12 out of your 18 are on one surface.
And Fed's what? How many Wimbledons does Fed have? Fed's got a lot of Wimbledons.
As opposed to winning on grass, I agree. I'm not, so
Yes, but, yes, it is one of the great athletic achievements of all time. It is one of the great statistical anomalies of all time. When he started losing on clay earlier this year, you thought, "Oh my God, maybe the run is finally coming to an end." And I'm going to tell you, because I watch more of this than you guys do, because it's I just love the sport. Okay, there was about a half hour against Federer in the semifinals. And there were the last two sets yesterday where this guy looked like the greatest freaking tennis player of all time. And you hear me say this all the time, Mitch. If you didn't know what year it was, you would have had no idea what year it was.
Yeah.
Kronos knows that hiring and retaining a modern workforce of salaried, hourly, full and part-time workers can be challenging, especially in today's competitive job market. That's why Kronos puts HR, payroll, talent, and time in one place. So HR professionals supporting a blended workforce have all the tools they need to engage and motivate their people every step of the way. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
But in the end, you know, you asked us, don't you think Federer has a chance? And I said what I said then, and I say it again. Surface wins. And the surface wins when it comes to Nadal and clay.
It's particularly crazy.
Look, you're right. Wimbledon is a weird thing. And if you can monster serve in Wimbledon, you can win games and matches there and sometimes even championships there without being the best player in the world. But it just seems to me that the clay is an even more unique surface. It's more singular to itself. You find, you know, all across history of tennis, people doing extremely well there who don't do that well in other surfaces. Whereas with Wimbledon, it seems like, yes, there are guys. I mean, obviously Roger Federer won a lot of Wimbledons, and Pete Sampras won a lot of Wimbledons and all the rest, but they played well everywhere else too. They didn't dominate on clay.
No, they did. But Fed, 8 of his 20, and again, it's not 12 out of 18, but right. 8 of his 20 were on grass. So it's horses. It is horses for courses.
Yeah, but there are four majors. And one's on grass and one's on clay. And I think 8 out of 20 is a lot better proportion than 12 out of 18.
How about, you know, 1 out of 20 on clay, though?
Yeah, well, 1 out of 20. But he got one. I mean, you know, the whole thing.
That's
is
why
to
the
do
greatest
once.
Upset, Mitch and Bob, the greatest upset in the history of tennis. You can come up with whatever one you want, was Robbie Soderling beating Nadal that year. And it's one of two losses in his life at Roland Garros, because that opened the door for Fed. And he made the most of it.
He made the most of it, but does he not get full? Does he not, you know, what is that? But the knowledge that it's going to happen, he's never going to beat Nadal in Roland Garros. Never going to do it. So that's going to impinge on his ultimate, you know, legacy.
It's like Pete Sampras never won on clay either. He never got the opening. I wanted to throw that in there because it's a really fun time in sports, because we had him doing that. We've got all the drama around the NBA Finals. And Bob, you're from Hockey Town, USA.
I am.
Oh,
the
stop
only,
it.
The only certified legitimate.
We have
a patent on it and it's trademarked.
It's like wearing a knockoff, like wearing a knockoff, Gucci bag or whatever. You
no,
know,
no,
you
Bob.
Spelled with one C.
We are the
Mitch,
original.
You're
Hockey Town, spelled HOKKET.
No, but Mitch, you're interrupting the representative, the representative from not only Hockey Town USA, but a team who actually has a team now competing for the Stanley Cup.
So it's my fault we're doing the podcast in 2019 and not 2002 or 2008 or 1995 or 97. Fine.
Maybe you did have aspirations.
Okay, fine.
To being
Let's move
style.
On from
it's
our
a great
personal
series.
City agendas.
Aren't you glad it didn't end last night? I am.
Yeah, always glad. But it is kind of weird. These are not 2-1 games, you know, 5-1, 7-2. It really makes you wonder what's happening from game to game in this series.
It's been a very strange series in that regard. You're right, Mitch, about the complete dominance of each teams on various nights. And now we come to 7 with a couple of interesting twists to the normal game 7 in any sport currency, because this is a fact that I've never seen a circumstance in the end. Now, the 1974 NBA Finals, the home home, the road team won the last five games. That's not usually recorded. That was a very strange one, but it still wasn't the same as what we're seeing with the Blues, which is a markedly better team on the road than home. The record is much better on the road than it is at home in the playoffs. For whatever reason, it's true. So now that means that you have to factor that in to a game seven in Boston. The second thing you have to factor in is that how the game is going to be called has been crucial to the game. The fact is the Blues are a more physical team, and when they are allowed to play their 1960s and 70s Broad Street Bully style of play and not get tooted, they have an upper hand against the Bruins. When they do get tooted, you put the team which has had a tremendous power play in evidence and which has and a chance to score goals, including last night a 5-on-3. But this is really important, and you don't know going into this game how it's going to be tooted on Wednesday night, and it could be a very determining factor in this game. I maintain, and maybe it's a total local bias, that if the two teams were to play their best A games, and by normal standards that of 2019, the Bruins would win. But we don't know how this game is going to be played. Is it going to be played as a 2019 game or a 1974 game? And that could be a difference.
Yep. Well, and obviously goaltending is huge.
And goaltending is always.
Rask was unbelievable last
year. Rask has been in his own.
In their wins, he's been incredible. You know,
how about the puck behind his back, by the way,
everything we've said about Toronto and the Raptors and the country and the city and everything, okay? St. Louis thought it was going to have its hockey moment last night. And including, by the way, Mitch, did you see what happened with the ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh no, there were
a statement.
Dewey Beach Truman. Okay,
those nefarious ad departments, guys, we know about them.
The Gremlins, Mitch. The Gremlins got in
deadlines. Yeah,
and the owner just talked about the great moment for the city, and they congratulated them. It didn't last. It didn't have, let's say, a long run,
didn't get a big print run.
But they thought they were going to have their moment last night. And now, what happens now, Mitch? You know what happens. The scene shifts back to Hockey Town, USA.
Well, so it doesn't shift back. They're playing it in Detroit? I didn't know. Wow, I got to get tickets for that. Sometimes in game sevens, though, it all depends on the team. Bob got this right. You know, first of all, whistles huge and all that, but it sometimes depends. Certain teams perform better when they don't have their home crowd behind them. You know, it's weird, but they just can focus on the game more, and they stop worrying about pleasing their fans. You know, they stop worrying about delivering the moment. So it may be, and that may be part of St. Louis's road thing, that, you know, when they're at home, they get a little too geeked up. You know, it's like having your mom and dad in the crowd versus calling them after the game's over and telling them what happened. You get to just focus on it, and that may be St. Louis's key. It'll be interesting to see if they can bounce back and win on the road in Boston in a game seven. My parting shot is on game sevens in period, and game sevens are weird. They can be very strange.
But overall, but guys, would you say it's been a very, very rewarding Stanley Cup playoffs? Except that the only negative, you know, is this discussion of officials. I must say the hand pass seems like a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
But it'll be brought up in the offseason about replay and so forth.
Oh, and they if the Bruins lose, Bob, that trip will be discussed all summer long in
Hockey
Town.
It's incomprehensible when you look at it. That is the equivalent. That is the, in terms of incomprehensibility, that is the equivalent of the Saints Rams.
Yes.
Because the whole world saw it. Everyone saw it. And a referee, you know, how a referee cannot call that if he's looking at it is incomprehensible.
You know, I have to say this, okay, as we now turn the page to our parting shots. I will lead off today because even though my parting shot is about the U.S. Open in golf, it deals with something that Bob says all the time, Mitch, about if we're talking about the refs, then the refs screwed up, okay?
Now, parting shots.
I never worry very much when the best golfers in the world show up at the United States Open, wherever it's being played, and start whining about the way the course is set up, whether it's at Pebble Beach or Shinnecock Hills or somewhere else. I listened to all the whining last year at Shinnecock, which I think is an even better championship course than Pebble is, and one I've been lucky enough to have played a lot in my life. But then I kept looking at the scoreboard and seeing the class up and down it, and thought that the Open was doing what it was supposed to do, which is identify the champion golfer of our year in this country. But I keep asking this question year after year. You guys know I do. When did the course setter uppers become as famous as the courses? It is like Bob always says. If we come out of big games in basketball talking about the refs, or even in the Stanley Cup playoffs, it's the refs who screwed up. I'm not taking the side of the whiners, but there has been a point where the course setter-uppers have gotten carried away and gotten the idea that we give a rip where they place the damn pins. Bottom line, I want these courses to be difficult. I want you to pay a heavy price for missing fairways. But these courses, and I'm talking about the best we have in the end, usually can do a good enough job defending themselves.
Here, here. I'll never forget Shinnecock last time around. Now... All right, guys, that's it. I've had enough. I've had enough of baseball's idiotic etiquette nonsense. The latest chapter took place Sunday afternoon in San Francisco when the Dodgers' Max Muncy had the audacity to hit one into the San Francisco Bay behind the right field stands off Madison Bumgarner. Oh, and he gently, I said gently, flipped the bat away and then hesitated a second, okay, maybe a second and a half, before starting his legitimate home run trot. So, you ask, well, Mr. Bumgarner took exception, yelling at Muncy to stop watching and start trotting. You know, baseball is rife with unwritten rules. You can't steal if you're ahead by too many runs, whatever that may be. You can't swing at 3-0 at certain times. You can't break up a no-hitter with a bunt. You can't. But the real story should be, you can't throw a pitch someone can hit halfway to Okinawa. Advice to Madison Bumgarner, shut up and pitch.
Hey, Mitch, by the way, before you start your parting shot, Muncy afterwards said he told Bumgarner, if you want me to stop looking at it, go find it in the ocean.
Oh, boy. Please, listeners of this podcast, if you have Wednesday night free, watch Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. If you don't have Wednesday night free, make it free and watch Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. You might be saying, but I haven't watched the first six games. Doesn't matter. You might be saying, I haven't watched Boston or St. Louis all year. Doesn't matter. You might be saying, I don't understand hockey. Even that doesn't matter. Because there are few things more tense, more thrilling, more powerful, and more emotional than a Game 7 of a Stanley Cup Final. As our dear colleague John Saunders used to say, there is nothing like playoff hockey, period. It's better than all the others, just not watched as much. The games are all out, down to the wire. Often a puck off a skate or a ricochet off an elbow will determine the winners from the losers. Multiply that by 100 in a Game 7. Plus, they have the best closing tradition ever, where the two teams skate and shake hands with one another before the Stanley Cup is given out. Simply put, Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Finals is a sports moment not to be missed, no matter what your sports acumen. You don't skip the Kentucky Derby because you never heard of the horses. You don't skip the Olympic 100-meter final because you can't pronounce the sprinters' last names. And you don't miss the Stanley Cup Finals Game 7. You will be sorry if you do. Besides, it's Wednesday night. What else you got going on? That's going to wrap it up for us here on the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Thursday, and you can catch it on iTunes and Stitcher and any of the other famous platforms. Until we see you on Thursday, well, there'll be a lot to discuss. I hope we're discussing Game 6 coming up in the NBA Finals and certainly the U.S. Open Golf. On behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great week.